The date is November 24th, 2009, and we are at 1866 Highland Drive in Fernandina Beach, Florida. The following interview is being conducted as a part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We are interviewing Robert Norman Alday, born May 5th, 1915, in Panama City, Florida. My name is James McCannell, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me is Donald Hill, who will operate the recording equipment. I will now begin the interview. Mr. Alday, could you tell us what your period of service was, sir?
My period of service was from 1942 to 1945 on active duty.
Okay. And during which conflicts did you serve?
Served in World War II over in the European theater.
Okay. And your rank at that time was what, sir?
My rank at that time was a second lieutenant when I went in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When I went into France, that is.
You see. And where did you have, or did you have your basic training, or were you, did you go through ROTC or what?
Basic training was in Camp Blanding.
Okay.
And also in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to Fort Sam Houston as a pharmacy, to the pharmacy school.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I went into OCS at Fort Benning.
Okay, Fort Benning, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And when you were assigned to overseas duty, where did you leave from?
The best I recall, we left from Boston.
Mm-hmm. Okay, aboard ship to...
Aboard ship, yeah. A Liberty ship.
Uh-huh.
Pretty sure that's right. But it's kind of slipped my mind whether it was Boston or New York, but I think it was Boston.
Okay. And then you were en route to...
Into England.
England?
Yes.
Okay.
We stayed in England from, I think it was Lincoln's birthday in 44 until June when we went into France.
Okay, and so you were not on the initial wave in Normandy?
No, we were not. As a matter of fact, the division, I believe, gets credit for going in on D plus 9.
Okay.
But I went in D plus 3 on a special group. Best I recall, about 23, 25 of us went in on this group.
And what was your job then?
I was a lieutenant, and not in charge of the group, but I was with the group.
Uh-huh. Were you strictly infantry, or were
oh,
you
yes.
medical?
Oh, infantry.
Okay. So you were infantry. And can you give us some idea of chronology? What happened after you arrived in Normandy?
Well, the first day we marched about... about 20 or 25 miles inland.
Mm-hmm.
But this was 3 days after the invasion.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty well torn up, the beach and everything else. But we were there.
A lot of debris on the beach?
Tremendous amount.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed behind at 29th Division attacked. We watched them attack the town.
Mm-hmm.
From the hillside that we were at. And I never will forget the a Navy lieutenant came up in a Jeep and wanted to know if we had any targets. And I said, "How do you mean targets? We're 25 miles in." He said, "That's all right. That's just about our limit." So I never will forget that. But we stayed there until the rest of our unit came ashore.
And your unit, I'd like to get this down to your unit was the 30th Infantry Division.
Oh, 30th Infantry Division, 117th Regiment, mm-hmm. 1st Battalion, Company C.
Okay.
I was a company exec at the time.
Okay, great. So when you, after you marched the 25 miles inland, what happened
just,
at that point?
We waited until our other group got in. Mm-hmm. We stayed behind the 29th Division.
Okay. And were they mustering your group for a specific operation?
No. I don't recall any special deal that we had at that time. Uh-huh. We waited for our other elements to come ashore.
Okay.
As I say, the division got credit for getting in mm-hmm. on the night. So it was piecemeal until we all got together.
I see. So when the others came up, what did they have you do then?
We were just kind of waiting because at that time, the channel got pretty rough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it postponed everything for several days until they could get supplies in. So we just kind of bivouacked and made our camp ready.
Did you, at that time, did you receive any enemy fire?
No, we did not. No, we did not. Uh-huh. We did a little later as we moved down by the river.
Uh-huh.
The Texas Sevier River was the Sevier River.
Mm-hmm.
We stayed on this side of the river until we all got together as a complete unit.
So were you involved in helping to take the bridge over the Vier?
No. I don't recall a bridge being there. We built a bridge. Our engineers built a bridge. And when we created our advance over the river,
mm-hmm.
It was knocked out about three times before we could cross it. We were the second, 1st Battalion was second in line going over the bridge. So as I say, before we got there, it had been knocked out about three times.
Uh-huh.
But we finally made it over, and with the aid of artillery, we had about 12 batteries behind us at one time. And the best I recall, that was the 4th of July.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. So you got across the river
and over into Normandy,
mm-hmm.
and to the hedgerows.
The hedgerow country, what was the next operation that you were involved in? Do you remember?
Well, we stayed. We met, advanced through the hedgerows,
mm-hmm.
hedgerows as best as we could. That's one of the greatest mistakes I think that the intelligence. Gave the high command, because the hedgerows were something that's just impossible. The Germans had a chance to, with very limited number of personnel, to protect a good square area with just one position over the far side.
And this is because you couldn't see anything.
No, the hedgerows.
Mm-hmm.
Or years and years built up with rocks and debris out of the plowed ground,
mm-hmm.
around the corners of his property, and eventually got up to be 6 or 7 feet tall. So you could not penetrate it with a tank. If the tanks tried to go over, or the underbelly would be very soft for mm-hmm. an attack and would knock the tank out. So finally, they got So they put a bulldozer blade on the front of the tank, and that way they could knock part of the hedgerow out,
mm-hmm.
and then use air firepower on that far side or in the corner. But eventually, we got through. It was a slow process.
Uh-huh.
But then we got on down to, I think St. Lo had been taken by that time, and we got on through and around the banks of the river. before the big breakout. If you recall, I think they had, the 30th Division was there. I know our regiment was on the front line.
Mm-hmm.
The 4th Division was on our right, and they supposedly had a great armada from England to bomb in front of us. Oh, it was a huge, huge thing. But the wind was blowing the wrong way, and the bombs came back on us. If you recall, General McNair.
Uh-huh.
General McNair was just to our right, and he was in a forward CP of the 4th Division, and it hit there and killed him and all in that forward CP. But eventually we broke through there, and then we ended up marching on down through the area, and we were pinched out down there by the 35th Division and the 4th Division. So by that time, if I recall, by that time, we got into a little town little school building that was overlooked by a church steeple in a little town of Troyscuts. And every time we'd move a finger out of that, our CP, well, we got a direct hit. So we knew that if firepower, the observation was coming from the church.
From the steeple, yeah.
But the 120th Division, our division, 120th Regiment of our division, said, "Oh, no, we've taken that town." Well, they did not take it.
They didn't do it very well, did they?
Didn't. Anyway, it was finally taken and knocked out. So then we were pinched out completely because the 1st Division had gone ahead of us. So we went into a little camp, bivouac area for a while. I think it was several days we stayed there. And then we were asked to relieve the 1st Division, man for man, hole for hole, around the little town of St. Bartholomew. And this is when the Germans were trying to break through to Avranches. Cherbourg had been taken already by that time. So anyway.
So they were trying to break through back to the coast again.
Yeah,
right?
Trying to break through completely.
Uh-huh.
Well, we were, as I say, we had no choice of trying to defend it. We were replacing man for man, hole for hole. So we got there late in the afternoon, and that night the attack started. Well, I called the colonel and try to get an accurate account on what he was talking about, what's in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 35 infantrymen and 5 tanks is all we got. Well, we were hit on our right platoon with more than a few soldiers. We opened them with bayonets and what have you. Colonel Franklin had been in the forward CP, and he knocked out one tank and came back through our area to his CP. Called him again, 35 infantrymen and 5 tanks, and we know where we've gotten 2 out of the way. They had 14 elements.
Oh, no.
Of tanks. All elements, elements from the Russian front. Part units, full-time units.
Well, intelligence failed on that
they
one, didn't
sure
it?
Did. So anyway, that's where I got captured. They overran us.
This was at St. Bartholomew, right?
St. Bartholomew, right.
Yeah, okay.
And I was captured there and moved behind the lines into Chartreuse in France. And then we were in trucked into Paris and put on, in boxcars, and eventually ended up in Poland.
Now, when you were captured, were there others captured with you at the same time?
Quite a few.
Yeah, okay.
In fact, it took most of most of the C Company was annihilated. We had two officers, company commander, and myself, and I think that's about it, was captured, yeah. Mm-hmm. We were in the Ford CP, and several of the others were captured along the way. But they did not dent our lines very much. Hmm. No, we held. And they penetrated, I think, about 1,000 yards, and that's about all.
Wow. So then you found yourself in a boxcar headed for Poland?
Well, they didn't know where we were headed.
Oh.
We had no idea. Uh-huh. Went through a town of Metz and around about to get to Berlin, and then from Berlin we went out, ended up in Poland. We had I think in our boxcar to start off with, we had some British and some paratroopers, some enlisted men, and all along the way we'd drop off this one or that one or the other one, whatever. But we were in the boxcar for a number of days.
How were you treated by your captors during that time?
Oh, the captors were all right. They said they have nothing to give you, that's all.
Oh.
No facilities or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Not too bad, but pretty rough. Mm-hmm.
So you ended up in Poland in a POW camp there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, we ended up in Poland in a POW camp. It was a... We were told that the British from Dunkirk... That were captured at Dunkirk,
uh-huh.
were boated around to Danzig. And the Free City of Danzig was about 125 miles from Schuben. Now, I say Schuben, it could be called Altbergen, depending on whether you're German or whether you're Polish.
Mm.
But anyway, they were taken a prisoner in Dunkirk, moved around to Danzig, and then opened a camp 125 miles below. And as the American officers became more, shall we say, in number, being captured, they moved the British out and moved the Americans in. So the camp was already fairly well established, and the first Americans that were there were the ones from North Africa. And that's where I met Colonel Waters, General Patton's son-in-law. Mm-hmm. He was second in command, best I recall. He was certainly the G2 of the camp. There was a Colonel Drake that was captured in North Africa, and he was a pretty tough old bird. He said to the Germans, "We will run it inside, you can run it outside." And they respected him.
Huh.
Oh, he was pretty tough, from what I understand. I did not know him, because he was repatriated, I think, a year before I got there. He had an ulcerated stomach.
Oh, I see.
So,
but he already had everything established.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was a well-run camp.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we had plays. We had churches on Sunday with some of the personnel preaching. We had the mess hall established, and all the food parcels were delivered to the area. You got 1/8 or 1/4 or 1/3, or depending. But all the meat and the other stuff went to the kitchen, and they serve you regular meals.
Now, did your family find out where you were being held?
I don't recall they did. They found out I was being held.
Yeah.
But I don't, because...
You didn't. So you never received any mail for them or
no.
from them. Mm-mm. Did you attempt to send them letters, or would they not allow that?
They were, best I recall, no, I don't recall that I did. I don't know why, but I don't recall that I did.
So the Germans then pretty much left you alone.
Oh, they would walk to the barracks and say, "You, what you doing?"
Inspect, like yeah. yeah. But I mean, they didn't make you fall out like Stalag 17.
No, I will never forget the when I first got there. The camp was celebrating Olympic Day, that's what I recall. They had the camp all decked out with flags all over the place and everything. I was wondering what I was getting into. But they had a regular, I would say a regular show of sportsman activities, running, and, you know, doing the athletic things for as you would an Olympic Day or something like that.
Yeah.
It was very impressive, it really was.
Now, had you been wounded at the time?
No.
Okay. So how long was it then before you were repatriated?
I think it was in January. When the Russians broke through at Warsaw, uh-huh. the Germans, they were death afraid of the Russians anyway. And when they broke through at Warsaw, the German command said, "Let's go." So he booed us out at nighttime. And you've seen pictures of people moving away from storms and away from plagues and what have you. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget the nighttime when we started moving out. It was getting dark late in the afternoon in February. And it was horse-drawn buggies and what have you on the road. So we were marching on both sides of the road. So we 1,500 officers, and I think it was about 10 or 15 enlisted men, we left the camp there. And 3 days later, we went to the Schneidermühle Canal, over the canal. And the Germans figured the Russians were so close to them, our guard left. Just left us on our own.
Really?
Oh. So the Russians evidently had orders to stop at the canal. So they did. But the Poles came up underground, gave us chickens and pork and everything. We had a big time. Well, next day, the SS troopers from Lithuania came and picked us up along with our guards. So a lot of our personnel decided they were going to stay on the ground. Forget it, I'm not going back. So anyway, we lost quite a few there. But I already said that as long as Colonel Waters were with our unit, I was going to stay with them. Mm-hmm. So that's when we started the 300-mile trip through North Germany. The middle of January, and snow up to your waist, and sleeping in barns and haylofts.
Were they able to feed you during this time?
We scrounged a little bit. But I never forget, you got the old American way, you know. We'd take a piece of bread we had or some cigarettes. And, you know, you got the Red Cross parcel and cigarettes, so you'd offer some of the Germans, give you two cigarettes. Next thing you know, somebody over your shoulder, "I'll give you four." So that's the American way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it got all, well, we got a little marmalade, a little butter, things like that. And some, you know, some rations we had.
How long did this 300-mile march take?
45 days.
Wow.
Then we were we would put back on a box car and went back into Magdeburg, which is right by Berlin, and from there down to Hamburg. And that's where we are. We walked in there with 300, I think it's 300 some odd officers out of 1,500, 300 some odd officers. Colonel Good, I think I mentioned before, Colonel Good of the 29th Division, he was actually the commander. He was a full colonel, but Colonel Waters was right with him. So we knew, they did, what was going on, because the radio was concealed, I think, in his boot. So we knew what was going on as far as the war was concerned. But after we were there for a while, General Patton sent a task force in to liberate his son-in-law. Well, that didn't work out too well because we had Serbs in the next compound, had just a wire in between us. And the Serbs were just, they were having a, never did like the Germans anyway. Mm-hmm. So we had some loyalist Serbs, some Tito Serbs. And boy, the minute that the tanks came in and shooting things up, they broke out. And they had a rampage, I say. But in the deal, Colonel Waters got shot in the rear. And Colonel Good did not want to leave until they found out how he was. So we found out where he'd been shot and everything. So we took off. But then it was no good. He was too far behind the lines. And every time the tanks wanted to go one way, they would block him. And next day, he just kept turning around and around until it got smaller and it all went back in.
Mm-hmm.
So they were recaptured. Now, about a group of 35, and among them was a very close friend of mine, a fellow by the name of Whitey McMullen. He was a captain, and he was in that group that decided not to go back. So he took off, but they were finally recaptured too, so he didn't gain anything by that. But anyway, we got back in, and the next day they moved us down to Nuremberg, and from there we went down to Munich and back into, it was a little camp, but outside of Dachau, not too far from the German camp.
Mm-hmm.
And about a week later, best I recall, we were liberated by the 99th Infantry Division. And from there, I hitched a ride on DC-3 back to Lahore.
Sure got to see a lot of Germany, didn't you?
Moved around pretty good.
Yeah, I would say moved so.
Yeah.
Wow.
We had one train knocked out from under us when we were going through.
Was that from airstrike?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. The British were pretty good at that.
Mm.
And they didn't look too close to see the Red Cross either.
Mm.
But they were all right, very good. But we got a truck. We were in a truck from going into Paris. We lost a truck ahead of us. And we lost a driver and a German, in the front seat was him, two of them. And no Americans were killed. I think there were some wounded, but not killed.
Mm-hmm.
After we got to Le Havre, stayed there for a few days, and We were on a Liberty ship, and I think I was the mess officer, and we had 315 men in the ship, and 35 officers. So we had a big time. It got rough, and we tried to feed the men downstairs, and his ship was getting that rough weather. He would start here and slide down to the other end because of everything that had been spilled over there. But anyway, we were the last convoy. We ran into icebergs.
Oh, wow.
And they knew where they were when we left La Havre. Mm-hmm. But anyway, ran into icebergs, and I think some of one of the ships probably ran into another, but no sank-ins or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of conversations you hear on a cool night, get your so-and-so out of my stern. But anyway, it worked out all right. And that story, it was in Collier's. Collier's magazine made a little story about the last convoy and it ran into icebergs. But we regrouped, and then we came into Boston. That's why I said a while ago, I think it was Boston we left from. But into Boston, and then eventually down to to Atlanta to be reassigned. So I was, after being home for, I think it was around 60 days, I was sent to Miami for rest and relaxing, and to be reassigned. So after 2 months down there, 2 weeks down there, I guess it was, I was sent as to be an escort carrier for troops. And then eventually my time was up and I got out. And let's see, this was, I think, the war in Japan ended on the August, 7th? Yeah, and I was in Miami then. And I believe that, within 2 months I was out. So that's about the sum and substance of it.
Well, when you say you were out, that you meant you were released from active duty.
That's right.
But were you still in the reserves at that time?
Oh, yeah. I stayed in the reserve.
Yeah.
That's why I got called back in the Korean deal. Because I was trying to get back into civilian life to make a living. And did not have time to go to, I wasn't assigned to a unit. I did not have time to go get my extra points. Mm-hmm. So that's how they found me. Of course, I went to see a colonel in Orlando, and I told him about my situation. He said, well, wait a minute. We've got a program at Fort Benning for a refresher course. He said, if you go now, that'll give you time to make points for this year, and you'll have some for next year. I said, fine. So I went up there, and sure enough, the day that I was to leave is when Korea hit. So anyway, I got back home, and then sure enough, within a matter of a few weeks, they called me. And I've never seen so many disgruntled people in all my life. When I got to Fort Jackson, colonels, majors, captains, everything had gotten out, stayed in reserve, tried to make a living, and got a business going, everything, and I called them back. So I had a break, and my wife was at home up in West Virginia, so when I got a chance to get up there, I did, and I went to Washington, and I asked him, I said, how did you get my name, you know? Well, we didn't know what we had out there. You didn't belong to a unit. So we wanted to get outside and see what we had. So you have to be outside of a unit, so we called you to find out. Anyway, that's just some of that. So,
well, did they actually send you to Korea?
No, I had 1 foot on the boat and 1 foot the other way. I did not. I ended up with a Norseman Division. What is that? 30, whatever. Northman, Minnesota Division, and they were on maneuvers in Texas. And I took a group from heavens. Anyway, I was with the group up there, and I ended up being in charge of the quartermaster for our regiment.
And that was for the duration of the Korean
conflict?
Yeah,
I got out of that. That was it, yeah. And that's when I, by that time I was married and had a child. So, and then I went back. I had enough points to stay active for another couple of years. And so that's about it. Then I came up here, went to work for Container Corporation. And that I was traveling quite a bit, and I just didn't have a family. I didn't have time to belong to a unit. I didn't have time to get my extra points. So I decided to get out. So I went in and talked to the sergeant. He said, well, I'll tell you what, the best thing I can do is retire you. So he said, I said, that's fine, retire me. So I did.
So then you went. You were already working for Container Corporation at that time, right? Okay. How many years did you work for them?
25.
Was it all here in Fernandina?
Right.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Started off as just a regular employee, and then I was promoted to assistant sales manager, general manager of the converting division of Container.
Mm-hmm.
So I was with them for 25 years and retired at 65.
And how long have you lived in Fernandina?
We came here after I got out of the Korea situation.
Like 53 or 54, something like that?
53. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's been, that's been 54 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. So when you retired from Container, what did you do then?
Well, the children were all off and married. Well, the youngest was not married, but the other two were married. And we took a look around, and we lived in Orlando for a while. And I'd always said we'd go back, but I think Disney spoiled it for that. And we said, well, hey, we might as well live here. Because my wife had her home in West Virginia. So we said, hey, best thing to do is we have a home here in the wintertime, and we'll go up to West Virginia in the summertime. So that's the way it's been. Now, this is the first year in over 60 years that we have not visited West Virginia in the summer because of my stroke and what have you. But Lord willing, we'll be there next year.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Good night.
That's great. I wanted to ask you one more question about the military. In your experience, how did the military benefit you towards your future life and career?
Ooh, that's pretty toughy. Well, it taught me a lot of respect, discipline, togetherness. Get it done, do it the right way, and it'll work out. Yeah. That's about it. And to have a little compassion for your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Like on a march through the cold weather in Germany, you had to have a little respect and a little compassion for your fellow man. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Now, if you want to take that film with you, I think you might enjoy it, and you can get a copy of it. You go ahead and copy it off of there if you want to.
Okay. Well, that sounds good.
That was quite an experience, marching through Germany, and having the experience of talking to the elderly German population at home, they knew the war was over. They knew that they were beaten a long time ago. I never will forget that the guards were not too strict on us. And I could, excuse me, several times I would go on a little trip and knock on the back door to see if I could swap something. I never, one time way up by the older estuary up there, I walked in, knocked on the back door, and went in. And the housewife, elderly, was there. And just as I started to ask her if she had any marmalade or what have you, here comes the German guards. They were also at the house. But they didn't say anything. I just turned around and walked away. So it's all right. But those things, some of those things, you remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you think the reason that the Germans treated you that way is they saw the handwriting the wall,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, they knew it.
They knew they were done.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, I know one time we were marching, and there was a dead horse on the side of the road. And a German was sitting close by. And we just kept marching, but we knew what he wanted to do. So as we left there, you know what he was doing, he cut some meat out of the horse. Mm-hmm. Well, they knew. They knew it was over long before. Mm. All right, any other questions?
Well, it sounds to me like you've covered pretty much all of my questions. Is there anything else that you need to add?
No.
Okay. No. Well, I want to thank you for your service to our country and for sharing your experiences with us. And this concludes the interview with Robert Norman Alday.